Hello, I'm Brett Dillon, and this is The Movie Chronicles. In this episode, we're on a road trip to Spain to find out what was happening in the comedy and horror genres in 2020. We begin on the lighter side with the horror of Celia del Ropero, My Grandma's a Lesbian, also known as So, My Grandma's a Lesbian. Director and script, Angelus Rain. Director of Photography, José Luis Alcain, and editor, Teresa Font. Music, Lucas Vidal. Actors, Rose Maria Sada, Veronica Fogu, Ingrid García Johnson, David Verdaguer, Candela Peña, Monica López, Paul Monnen, Alex O'Doherty, Leander Vive, Liz Lobato, and Maria Caballero. First things first. I prefer the Spanish title to the English one. The Spanish title refers to a running gag where one of the grandmothers insists she's coming out of the wardrobe. Only men come out of the closet. I will also note that the dialogue is in Spanish and English. The problem for me was that the English was heavily accented Scottish, which made it a struggle for me as I tried to tune my ear into what was being said. Personally, I liked this touch, but I give my listeners fair warning, at least those who are not Scottish, that this can become trying. The film is set on the island of Lanzarote in the Canary Islands, so named not after the birds, but dogs. Critical opinion is, to put it kindly, divided. I shall write this review on the principle of charity, but my true feelings are more akin to what I expressed about Falling in Love, 2019. The same problems are evident here, although I don't know enough about Spanish culture and the subculture of Lanzarote to do the same deep dive. Let's just say a black American character arrives who, for no reason, is asked if he knows a haka and begins to... Well, let's just leave it there. Haka isn't African. Two 70-year-old women, Celia and Sophia, decide to get married. But first, they have to come out to their families. Only two of the family care enough to come straight to the island. Notice how I fit the pun in there. Eva, a lawyer about to marry into the family of conservative, Brexit-loving, upper-class Scot, a very rare breed indeed, most Scots are opposed to Brexit. She was raised by her grandmother and opposes this marriage, as the publicity could end her engagement. Jorge, the son of the other grandmother, also turns up. He fled the island because of its stifling provincial nature. His objection to the wedding is how the rest of the island will take it. He doesn't mind them living together. He minds them being indiscreet about it. As the pair begin to cohere on the mission to sabotage the wedding, Eva's actress mother arrives, and her gay brother, who has converted to Islam and suddenly becomes straight. Maybe we should file this film in the fantasy genre. Or maybe he doesn't have a wife so much as a fishwife. The film presents his conversion as genuine. Celia has confessed all to the press, and this is broadcast just as the Scotsman and his family arrive. He thinks he's being pursued by the press for some dodgy accounts he's set up on the Canary Islands. Seeing he's uptight, Perla, niece of Sophia, slips him some peyote to calm him down. The scene where he starts tripping is the best sequence of the film. Jorge and Eva have begun romancing. Their meet cute was when Jorge nearly ran her over at the airport and she broke the heel of her shoe to symbolize she's not a suitable candidate for the upper class. Jorge has a problem, and I'm not talking about actor David Verdaguer. His problem is to make this crap believable. When we first meet him, he is scruffy, inarticulate, and gauche. He confesses to Eva that he left the island because of the bullying he refused and that people think he's a fool. Later in the film, he meets one of the bullies who apologizes and says he understands now, as his son is the one being bullied. A beard trim and a haircut later for Jorge, and all his characteristics are lost. He goes from a comic foil to the romantic hero. As if Professor Dumbledore had waved his wand crying, "Generis Romantico," and left him fully formed for the audience. Full praise then to director Angelis Rhein and editor Teresa Font for slipping that one by me. I didn't notice the change in Jorge until well into his change, and then it annoyed me. Jorge is a better character as a comic foil than a romantic lead, or if a romantic lead, he needs his quirks so that the love can come out of them. The backstory we are given is that this is the reuniting of a teenage love affair that presumably lasted weeks, from the way they talk about it. I didn't get all that upset about things the critics have been obsessed with. This is because I wasn't reading this as an LGBTQ+ film. The message I was getting was about the strength of families and how people within a family support each other, with a subtext that the Catholic Church is family too, and should show the same attitude. Director of photography José Luis Elkane was born on December 26, 1938, in Tangier, Morocco. José was educated at the French Lycée Renault and the Spanish Institute in Morocco. Today, he is best known as a frequent collaborator with Pedro Almodovar, and for being the first DOP to use fluorescent tubes as key lighting, the principal and dominant source of light in a set. He said, "The digital revolution has changed the way that directors work." There's a famous memo in which David O. Selznick warned King Vidor not to do more than 5 takes of each shot. Today, thanks to the low cost of digital technology, one can shoot countless takes and with several cameras. Many movies are shot with 3, 4, or even 8 cameras. That destroys any notion of the director's point of view. There are still directors who shoot with only 1 camera, but there are directors who have no idea what they're going to edit while they're shooting. They use 3 or 4 cameras, and the end result looks like a television broadcast. Composer Lucas Vidal was born in 1984 in Madrid, Spain. Lucas spent 10 years in Hollywood cranking out scores. Along the way, he has also written music for ballets, sports events, TV, and also moved to the production side of the music business. Actor Rose Maria Sada was born on July 30, 1941 in Barcelona, Spain, and she died in 2020. She was an actor-director better known for her TV work. History was all about the COVID crisis, so here goes. January the 31st, first reported case of COVID-19 in Spain, a German tourist in the Canary Islands. February the 9th, the second case was reported, a British tourist in the Balearic Islands. Fernando Simón, head of medical emergencies in Madrid, confidently predicted Spain will have only a handful of cases. February the 13th, first recorded death. February the 14th, the University Hospital of Nuestra Señora de Candelaria was put under lockdown after a doctor from Lombardy tested positive for the disease. The H10 Costa Adeja Palace in Tenerife was also put in lockdown. February the 25th, 4 new cases were confirmed and all were related to the Italian cluster. A retrospective analysis of genetic sequences has revealed that there were at least 2 strains of the disease circulating through Spain at this time. This means there was multiple introductions of the disease and therefore no patient zero. February the 26th, the first reported case of community transmission of the disease in Spain was found. Over March, the various provinces began to report their first cases. March the 6th, myths and legends about the virus were spread through the country faster than the virus itself. The Spanish Episcopal Conference recommended all churches should remove holy water from the pillars, avoid shaking hands, and not kiss religious images. March the 8th. 120,000 people at an International Women's Day march and 60,000 football fans did their best to help spread the disease in Madrid. March the 9th. Various provinces began to close schools. 2 days later, there is a cluster of cases in a school in Alava. March the 10th, Spain cancelled all direct flights to and from Italy. Panic buying in Spain began. March the 13th, it was announced confirmed cases had been found in all of Spain's provinces. Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez declared a national state of alarm for 15 days. This involved suspension of courts and festivals. March the 14th, the country locked down for 14 days. March the 15th, lockdown came into effect. Cases had increased by 66% by this time. March the 16th, the Spanish borders were closed. March the 17th, a support package of 20 billion euros was announced to cushion the economic impact. By royal decree, there was a moratorium on mortgage payments for workers and the self-employed. Support for workers and employees, companies were guaranteed liquidity, and some money was put aside to research a vaccine. March the 19th, the first healthcare worker died from the disease. March the 21st, the Ministry of Health purchased 640,000 rapid test kits. These were later found to be only 30% accurate. March the 23rd, the army was deployed around the country to enforce the lockdown. It found elderly people dead and or abandoned inside retirement homes. A criminal investigation was started. The Palacio del Aylo, an ice rink in Madrid, was set up as a morgue. 5,400 medical professionals had tested positive for the disease and were sent home to quarantine. This put a further strain on hospitals and led to media questions about the supply of protective gear to frontline workers. March the 25th, the Spanish death toll exceeded that of China. March the 29th, all non-essential workers were ordered to remain at home for a further 14 days. March the 30th, Fernando Simón, the public face of the government response to the virus, tested positive. He temporarily resigned. While rumor flits around Spain, it is appropriate that the next film is Voces, also known as Don't Listen. Director, Ángel Gómez Hernández. Script, Santiago Díaz. Director of Photography, Pablo Rosso. Editors, Victoria Lamas, Victoria Martin, Miguel Cerón, and Mario Sierra. Actors, Rodolfo Sánchez, Ana Fernández, Ramón Barria, Balan Fabra, Lucas Blas, and Nerio Barros. Voices, is a better title than the English one and gives a better idea of what the film is about. What it is a very Spanish horror film. Daniel and Sara have a business buying old houses, living in them while renovating them, selling, and moving on. Their son Eric has become uncomfortable in the current house and is having counseling sessions about his anger issues. He claims he is hearing voices, but will say no more. The counselor dies in a car crash soon after. Eric is the next to die. After complaining of hearing his father's voice on the walkie-talkie, Eric drowns in the kidney-shaped pool one night. A distraught Sara decides she can't live in the house and leaves. Daniel remains to complete the renovations. The next night, Daniel hears Eric's voice on the walkie-talkie calling for help. After doing some investigation, he gets in touch with German Redondo, a writer and investigator of paranormal phenomena. His specialty is EVP. The film takes a long time to explain these initials. EVP stands for Electronic Voice Phenomena. Jemin became interested in the paranormal after the suicide of his wife. He is seeking answers to why she died. He brings his daughter, Ruth, along to help with the investigation. They both believe there is probably a natural explanation until the infrared camera picks up an otherwise invisible presence. This is a good sequence, where Jemin is trying to interact with something he cannot see, while Ruth, down in the monitor room, is trying to direct him where the presence is. This encounter is followed by a string of dead cats left hanging from a tree. Jemin recognizes this as a medieval symbol used by witches to warn people away. Sarah, meantime, gets a phone call from Eric, asking her to come to the house because Daddy has let a bad man into the house. She rushes to the house, goes into Eric's room, and then hangs herself. Ruth has gone into town to buy some groceries when a woman calls her aside to warn her about the House of Voices. It seems bad things have been going on there since the time of the Inquisition. Horror films that use jump scares are, in the main, lazy. My rule of thumb is to allow a film one jump scare and then I'm done. This film has many, and I would like to promote it as an example of how jump scares should be done. I jumped every time. A good jump scare works because it is unexpected. Lazy horror films clearly signal when a jump scare will occur. This film has almost no signaling. They occur just as you're expecting a dialogue scene, or the pacing suggests things will cool down a little before the next horror is revealed. Until the finale, it isn't even things jumping out at you. The first two-thirds of the film is about things caught out of the corner of the eye, or sounds which almost sound like human speech. It's setting up the mind to accept things that don't make sense. A long-running revenge against people who have done no harm. The only real cliché is the use of an overhead travelling shot of a car moving along a road. Stanley Kubrick started all this in The Shining, 1980's opening credits sequence. Drone technology has turned this shot into an almost compulsory shot to be used in movies of all genres. Seeing one such shot appear in this movie reminded me of just how cliched this image has become. The Inquisition seems to be equated with fascism, at least in the sense that what we are shown of it is trying to suppress free speech, hence the supernatural voices. The supernatural forces are also deceptive. They show the victim what the victim wants to see, and so lures them to their deaths. Although there is a plot inconsistency in that Eric sees all the coming deaths, which begs the question, why would he want to do that? How would that knowledge tempt him to his death? Next episode returns us to the best science fiction films of all time, where I'll be discussing the comic book breakthrough of 1968's Barbarella. This is only available to Buzzsprout or Patreon supporters, so you might just want to think about becoming a member so you're never embarrassed by your parsimony ever again. If the stigmata of parsimony doesn't bother you, then you can rejoin the pod people as I take them to 1899. Until next time, remember, Barbarella is not a fella.